Okay, we're still here at the bottom of Pei Hei Amud Bet. Here the Gemara is going to ask a question. This question will revolve around exactly what the Girsa is in the Mishnah. It says, Vatanya, don't we have a Braita? Em bivin anfaktin or anfankinon vim hevi pasul. So the Braita seems to say that you can't bring this anfiktun, and if you do bring it, it's pasul. As opposed to our Mishnah, which says anfiktun im hevi kasher. You're not supposed to bring it. But if you do bring it, then it'll be kasher. Now that is the girso of the Ravenu Tam, that our Mishnah says imevi kasher, and the Braita says imevi pasul. The Ravenu Tam, or the Tosfot here, claims that Rashi's girso in the Mishnah was imevi pasul. So then there's no real question. If you bring a Braita that says the same thing as the Mishnah, then there's no question. And therefore they have the additional statement of izahatanyam imevi kasher. But they have an additional Braita that says imevi kasher, because this Braita is not a stira to the Mishnah, so we need a second Braita to be the stira over here. So the question of what the Girsa is in the Mishnah will affect how your Girsa is in the Gemara. According to Rabbeinu Tam, that the Girsa, which we have in our Mishnah, which is imevi kasher, will then be vatanya imevi and afiktun, imevi pasul will be the question. Whereas according to those that have the Girsa in the Mishnah, afiktunon is imevi pasul, then the question is from the next statement of the Gemara, which is vatanya imevi kasher. So mipnei shehu saraf. The reason that it's considered to be pasul is because it doesn't have any substance to it. Consider it to be the sap, the juices of the fruit. And since it's just the juice of the fruit, what they call mohel, zeya, the sweat, the mohel, it's considered to be nothing. It doesn't have any significance. It's the way the Gemara in Brachot describes fruit juices in general. Why we make a shahakol on fruit juices is because they have no substance to them. They're zeya ba'alma. So to over here, this afriktinon is also just that zeya ba'alma. So I'm Rav Yosef Lokasha, Harab Chia, Harab Shimon bar Rabbi. It depends on which Tana that we're looking at. There's Rabbi Chia, Talmud of Rabbi, or Rab Shimon bar Rabbi, Rabbi's son. Rab Chia Zorikle. When Rab Chia used to bump into this type of, we'll see in a second what it is, this anfikton, he used to throw it out. Natos says he didn't literally throw it out, he just didn't eat it. It wasn't edible to him, it wasn't considered to be a food to him. On the other hand, Rab Shimon bar Rabbi metabobe. He used to dip with it. He used to use it as a dressing, some sort of salad dressing, condiment of some sort, and he would eat it. V'simarech, and the way you can remember that is, Asherim mikamtsin, that the wealthy ones, Reb Shimon bar Rebbe, Rebbe was a Nasi, Reb Shimon and his son of a Nasi, mikamtsin. They're kumates, they are a little bit miserly, they keep together, they held on to the juices here, even though Rabbi Chia considered it not to be something that was edible. Here you have a machloket about whether this mohel that comes out of the olives has substance to it, and whether if it has substance, that will determine whether imhevi, bidiyaved, whether it's kasher or pasul. So now the Gemara is going to speak about what exactly this aftinon is. It says from the Megillah test there that they used to put the women, shisha chodeshim b'shemen hamor. My shemen hamor. What is this shemen hamor? I'm Raguna Bachia, Amar Stachto. Rabbi Yirmei Abba Amar Shemen Zayit Shelo Evi Shlish. It's a olive that hasn't ripened past a third of its ripening stage, its development stage. So we also have a Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Anfankinon Shemen Zayit Shelo Evi Shlish. So here's your answer. What is this Anfiktinon or Anafkinon that is mentioned in our Mishnah? That is Shemen Zayit Shelo Evi Shlish. It's shemen that comes out of a olive that has yet to ripen a third of its maturity. L'masachinoto, why would you use this type of olive oil? Shemesira te seyar madina te basar. It was a depilatory as well as a skin softener, moisturizer, and therefore they used to use it to remove hair from the body and to soften the skin. So that's what the usefulness of is, meaning that Tosfos before said Rav Chia didn't throw it out, because even if he didn't eat it, he still used it for its efficacy as a depilatory and as a skin moisturizer. So he didn't really throw it out, but he just didn't need it. The question here about this anifkinon or this anfaktin is whether it's edible or not. It's useful. It's clearly useful. It's a question of it does it have a side of it that is edible. Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe says yes, and therefore he would say mevevi b'diavad it's kosher. Whereas Rabbi Chia says its only use is non-consumption uses, and therefore over here we would concede mevevi pasul. If you bring in b'diavad, then it is pasul. Tarabanan, Shemen Zayid Kavush, Shaluk, Sharui, Vishoshmarim, Vishoreachra, Loyavi, Vimevi, Pasul. So all of these types, this olive oil. soil, whether it was pickled, cooked, sharui, it was soaked in water, shmarim, the leftovers, the dregs, reachwa has a bad smell to it, lo yavi, vimevi, pasul. Not only you shouldn't bring it, but if you do bring it, it doesn't work even b'diavet. By rabo, higdishu mahu sheyikala ke'alav, mishum balmum. So now this is the same question we asked yesterday. He asked it about the etzim that hit liu, and he talked about case of chita, sheit liya. Yesterday, the same posited the same question, whether it's rabo. Yesterday's daf was rabo, now it's rabo. So whatever the gear says, whether it's rabo, it should be consistent. I'm assuming that it should be rabo everywhere or rabo. But the question again is, mashi ke'alav mishum balmum. Kaven de pasul ke balmum domi. Since it's ineffective, it's pasul, it's not ra'oi to go on the mizbeach, it's the same thing as a balmom. If you're makdish in balmom, you get malkot. So it's over here. Odilma, in balmom, el behema. Same question we had yesterday. Does balmom blemish only apply to animals, not to other items, even though they're pasul? They're not classified as a balmom. Teiko, we leave that as an unresolved issue, like we did yesterday, with regards to the wood and the chita. Okay, the next mission is going to describe for us here what oils are produced and what they're good for. So basically, shlosha zeitim heim. There are, we'll call them three grades of zeitim, but it's also three onot zeitim. Three times that the olives are taken off the tree. Ubehen shlosha, shlosha shmanim. And each one of these time periods also produces three levels of shemen. So we'll call it this. We have A, B, and C are the times that they take off the zeitim from the tree, grade A being the best. Then in within grade A, there is also 1, 2, and 3, levels 1, 2, and 3. So you'll have A1, A2, and A3. Then in B, you'll have B1, 2, and 3. And C, you'll have C1, 2, and 3. So that's what the mission is laying out for here. A zayit arishon, the first one, the grade A, is megargaro barosha zayit. You take it off on the top of the zayit. What this means, Rashi brings down two interpretations. Either it means the zeitim that are found at the top of the tree, since they have the most exposure to the sun, therefore they ripen the fastest, and that'll be the first ones that you take off. So one possibility is the location on the tree, meaning the highest point in the tree. The other possibility is megagro rosh zayit, means the ones that ripen the fastest, the ones that were first ripened. It's not about the location, but rather about the ones that are ripe. Vikotesh, and then he cuts it up. Venotein l'toch hasal, and then he places it into a basket. After he's cut it up and places it into the basket, the oil will flow out by itself into the basket, but the basket is porous, and therefore the oil will drip out. They'll capture the oil underneath, but the olives, any of the dregs, will be left behind in the basket. They don't literally put it into the sal, but around the edges of the sal. Zerishon, this is the first of the oils that comes out. So that means A1. Then Chazar v'toein bikora. A2 is that after they've allowed it to freely flow out in the basket, the oil that comes out by itself, they take it and place it under the beam, and they put it under pressure to press the olives in order to gain oil from them. V'yudomer b'avanim. You don't do it with a korah, with a heavy beam, but rather with stones. Ze sheni. This is what we call A2. Chazar v'tachan. After that, he takes them and mills them. V'ta'an. And then he puts the korah on top of them again. Press them. After he's milled them, he presses them once again. Ze shlishi. This is what we would classify as A3. Harishon. A1 is the menorah. Can be used for the menorah. Vashar l'menachot. A2 and A3 can be used for menachot. Hasheni. Not exactly. It sounds like it's on the top. You don't place it into the middle of the sal, but around the edges of the sal. I didn't totally understand the distinction in terms of, practically, I'm not sure what the difference is. I'm putting it into the sal itself, around the edges of the sal. I mean, you're looking for the oil to flow down. All right, Sheni, class B is Megargaro Barosh Agag. So once again, the question of what this means is this a location? Meaning Rosh Agag is the middle of the tree. Those that will ripen in the second batch, and they're basically the first batch were at the top of the tree. And now the B batch is Barosh Agag. You got up on your roof. About that level on the tree would be where it ripens. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that you take these out off the tree and spread them out on Rosh Agag. You put them on the Rosh Agag to soften them because they haven't softened entirely on the tree. Vikotesh, once again, you cut them up. And Otein l'toch hasal, and you place them in the basket. You place them around the edges of the basket. Both of them are trying to accomplish the same thing, is that the oil will drip through the porous basket, and the dregs and everything that remains will stay in the basket, around the edges of the basket. Zerishon, that's B1. Toein b'korah, that is called B2, which is that you take the olives then and then put them into the press under the beam. Yudomer above anim, that you place them under stones. Zeshini, that's B2. Chazar b'techan, you go ahead and then mill them, vita'an, and then you place a beam on top of them once again. Zeshlishi, that's B3. Harishonah l'menorah, B1 can be used for the menorah once again. Hashar l'menachot, B2 and B3 can be used for menachot. Hashlishi, now this is the third, C. Otno v'beit abad, achilek, you pick the olives off. Either these are the olives at the lower end of the tree, or the olives that failed to ripen far enough on the tree. You gather them in, and you leave them in the beit abad. You smush them together in the beit abad, achilek, until they soften of themselves. I mean, they start to rot a little bit, and they soften by being placed in the beit abad. After you've already gotten to that point where they're softened, then you take them up to the roof and you dry them again. Because that which came out when they rotted a little bit is not shemen, but rather mohel. It's the same zeya that we talked about before. It's some sort of liquid, but a liquid of rot, not shemen. So you want to dry off that liquid. So you take them up to the top of the roof. Then you kotesh, then you cut them up. You place them in the basket. Around the edges of the basket. Zerishon, this is C1. Toin vikora, then you place them under the beam. Bavanim, under the stones. Zeshini, that's C2. Chazar v'tachan, then he goes ahead and mills them again. V'ta'an, he places them under the korah once again, or under the avanim, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Zeshlishi, that's C3. Harishon, the menorah, in C as well. The first one, C1, is good enough for the menorah. Bashar, C2 and C3 are limenachot. Ibailo, migargarotnan, o migalgalotnan. What is the word that is used in our Mishnah? Is it migargaro or migalgalo? The way Rashi reads it, there is no difference. Both of them mean the point at which the olive ripens. As Rashi says, that Shemaniach Zaydat Shinid Bashel, Hagargarim Kol Tzarcham, till each individual olive ripens sufficiently, or Megalgalo is, you put them on the Ilan, Ad Shinid Bashlu Yafeh, until they ripen fully, and it's Kamo Gebeitza Megulgelet. It's a Megulgelet. Also here, the Zaytim Megulgalim means they are fully ripened. The Oroch, it's quoted by Tosfot over here, says the difference is Megargaro means that you locate echad echad. Means that you pick them off piecemeal. They don't come off in a single ona, a single time period. Rather, migargaro means you collect those that are ready or ripened to be taken off the tree. So that would be the word migargaro, as opposed to migalgalo, which was zeitim nimtakim lechila nikraim migulgalim. Those that are sweet enough to eat are called migulgalim. So one of them focuses on the action of picking. The other one would focus on the ripeness of the olive. So they both would be the same thing. You pick the olive when it's ripe, but one would focus on the action of picking, says that you're taking them off the tree, whereas the galgalo is focusing on the ripeness of the zayit, making it ready to be picked. So now Gemara says, Tashma, the Tan, you have a brighter shemen zayit mizito, shemen zayit from the olive, mikan amru, zayit rishon, migalgalo barosh zayit, vikonso the beit abad, you take it off the top of the tree, and then you put it on the beit abad, similar to our mission, v'tochano berechayim, then you mill it, v'notno besalin, and you put it into the salim, shemen ayotze mimenu, zayah rishon, the shemen that comes out of that is the first, A1. That's A2. Chazar parak takes it apart. Tachan, then he grinds, mills them again. Matan zayi shlishi. That's A3. Harishon l'menorah, v'ashal l'menachot. Chen zayit sheni. Same thing you do with the B level of zayit. V'zayit shlishi. The C level has a slightly different process because they never ripen on the tree fully. Oh no, bebeit abad. You put them, gather them together, mush them together in the beit abad in the press. Actually, like here until they rot a little bit. Malei l'rosh agag. They soften, they rot. Then you put them on the top of the gag to dry out. Also, tan kamin tamara, and you make them like dried out dates that you would put up there. Actually, zovu meimav until the liquid starts to come out of it. Konsan the beit abad. Then you bring them to the beit abad, but tochano berechaim, and then you mill them and no besalim. Then you place them in the baskets. Shemra yotze mimeno zayah rishon. That's called C1. Dan bekora, you put them under the beam. Shemra yotze mimeno zayah sheni. That's C2. Parak, you take apart the korah, I mean, lift off the weight. Chazar v'tachan, you mill them again. V'ta'an, you place the korah. Nemzeh shishi, that's C3. Harishon, the menorah. C1 can be used for the menorah. V'ashar, the menachot. C2, C3 are for menachot. V'idomer, lo yatochano berechem, ala kocho b'machteshet. You don't mill them, but rather you cut them up. You mush them and cut them into pieces, but you do not mill them. V'lo yatoin b'korah, and you don't place a beam on them, ala bavanim, but you put stones on top of them. V'lo yatochano b'salim, you don't place them in the baskets, ala toch svivotas, around the edges of the baskets. So that just, the Braita has two differences from our Mishnah. One is it uses the word migalgalo instead of migargaro. So the question of what it should be, sounds like from the Braita that the word should be migalgalo and not migargaro, which is actually what's found in our Mishnah. The second thing that's different between the Braita and our Mishnah is that the Braita says that you should mill them before you put them in the basket for it to drip out. You mill them and then put them in the basket and have the oil drip out. Our Mishnah says koteshotam. Cut them up and place them in the basket. We do see in the Braita that happens to be a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanna. Tanakama. Tanakama says you mill them and then put them in the basket. Buddha says no, that you cut them up and place them in the basket. That second machlokot, which is also appears, the other two machlokot between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakama appear in our Mishnah. One of which is where you place them in the basket, the middle of the basket around the edges. And the other one machlokot is about whether you put a korah or avanim on them. Both of those are found in our Mishnah. So now the Gemara is going to ask that it's hagufakasha. In our Mishnah, you have a internal stira because our Mishnah says kotesh. Kotesh is Rabbi Yehuda tochasau, but yet our Mishnah says that the stam is to put it inside the basket. And then you have Rabbi Yehuda arguing. That sounds like the chachamim. So our Mishnah takes the day of Rabbi Yehuda with regards to ketisha versus tchina, but it takes the day of the chachamim about putting it into the sal versus around the sal. So how could it be mitzing a marriage? Hatan the rabbanon. So hatan a sabra law. Our the Tana of our Mishnah thinks kavate bechada. He holds like Rabbi Yehuda in one hand. So polygale bechada. And he disagrees with the bechada. I mean that he is mixing and matching. He holds like the fact that you do ketisha and not tchina, but he thinks you put him in the middle of the basket, not around the edges of the basket. Okay, next Mishnah. Harishon shibarishon in the malamenu. A1 is the best oil you can get. Hasheni shibarishon, varishon shibarishon shavim. A2 and B1 are equal. So the second A2, which it would be, what you can do is you can sign numbers to them. If you add them together, you'll get the same number. If you say A is 1, and you take the second level of that, gives you a sum of 3. If you take B and assign a 2 to that, and you say B1, it also sums up to 3. So therefore, A1 and B2 are equal. Hashlishi shibishon, A3, vasheni shibisheni, and B2, varisham shishlishi, and C1 are all equal, because they were all equal in that methodology, all equal 4. They all equal up to 4, so that's A3, B2, and C1 are all of the same level shavim. Hashlishi shibisheni, B3, vasheni shibishlishi, and C2 are also equal. They'll equal 5 in that combination. Hashlishi shalishi, and the matamenu. C3, there's nothing below it. I mean, that is the lowest level of olive oil that you can produce. Alright. Av kol menachot hayu bedin shitanu shemen zayit zach. Some menachot should require the same thing that the menorah requires, which is shemen zayit zach, pure olive oil. Ma menorah she'en la achila, menorah which is not going to be consumed, tun the shemen zayit zach, menachot she'en la achila, ainu din shitanu shemen zayit zach. It certainly should require shemen zayit zach. Tamud omar, zach katid lemaor, when it comes to having pure crushed olive oil, lima'or, that's only for lighting, vein zach katit liminachot. So that comes to be a miut, ma'or, and not minachot, teaches you that shemen zayit zach was only necessary for the menorah, not necessary for the minachot. Now Shavin, the Gemara says, how could you say that, for instance, A2 and B1 are really equal? Because Bahamart is shown the menorah. When we looked in our previous Mishnah, or the previous part of the Mishnah, we said A1, B1, and C1 are all good for the menorah. The way you're terminating it now, if A2 is equal to B1, then A2 should also be good for the menorah. B1 is good for the menorah, so then A2 that's equal to it should also be good for the menorah. But that's not what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said only A1, B1, and C1. So how could you say that they really shavin? When I say they're equal, we're only talking about within the world of menachot. In the world of menorah, there's only one thing you can use, and that's A1, B1, and C1. Nothing. It doesn't matter if they're equal, not equal. Can't use anything else. When it comes to menachot, and I'm trying to bring a mincha, and I want to bring, as Rashi says, mivchar nidarecha, I want to bring the best. So now I have a choice. I have a choice between A2 and B1. The Mishnah tells us those are shavin. You can bring either one. You're indifferent between A2 and B1. So that when you're looking at that scale of what to bring for the menachot, that's when we say shavin. When we look through the different grades, and we can tell you that A2 equals B1, or A3 equals B2 and C1, those are all telling you, giving you which you can use for menachot in terms of being mivchar nidarecha. Right? Av kol menachot ayu b'din. Tan rabanan zach. It says zach. Ain zach el naki. Has to be clean. You don't mer katit. Ain katit el katush. You learn that katit, when it says that it has to be termin zayit zach katit lamaor. Zach means pure. Katit means cut up. Yachui hay zach katit pasul menachot. I would think that zach katit would be no good for the menachot because it says shemin zayit zach katit lamaor. It sounds like lamaor and nothing else. You can't use it for menachot at all. Tamad omer bisaron solet balul b'shemin katit. Even by the menachot, we have the terminology bisaron solet balul b'shemin katit. Im kei matam alom lamaor, then why do I have the miut of the maor to teach me? Abnei achizchun, for savings. My chizchun, what's the savings over here? Rabbi Lazar, Torah chasal mamonan shel Yisrael. Torah had rachmonos on Bnei Yisrael that they wouldn't have to expend too much money. Because if you bring shemin zayit zach, which is the most expensive, but only a very little amount, there's a small quantity that comes out in each one of the grades A, B, and C. That's what you can use for menorah. You also have to use it for menachot, which come much more frequently and are brought by the individuals as well as the mikdash every day. It would be an expense that would be unreasonable. The Torah was chasal Munam Shal Yisrael, that the Shemen Zayit Zach is only required for the menorah, not for the menachot. So the limud basically is that Shemen Zayit Zach is necessary for the menorah, but it's also good for the menachot. But it's not necessary for the menachot. You can bring menachot from the other grades of oil, and therefore you won't have this expenditure associated with the menachot. So Tzavi Bnei Yisrael v'yichu elecha Shemen Zayit Zach, that's by menorah. Meshvo Bar Nachmeni, elecha v'lo li. It says, v'yichu elecha is for you, v'lo li, not for me, lo la ora ani tzarich. From that they learn out, the Medrash learns out that when you light the menorah, the light is not for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but rather for you. So there are two things to be said about that. Number one is that the menorah sits outside of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, sits in the Kodesh, and there's a parochet between it and their own. The Shechina is shore in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and the menorah is lit outside in the Kodesh. So it's not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of the simanim for that is that you put a parochet. There's a parochet between them, showing that the light's not for there. The Gemara will give another example in a second why not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the point is, and this is an important idea, which I've tried to put together with regards to the Kelim in the Mikdash, that instead of us viewing, we view many times what we bring on the Mizbeach is an offering to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's true of the Mizbeach HaOlam. On the other hand, the inner Kelim in the Kodesh are not that way. You would think that the bread is offered up to Hashem to eat, and the menorah is lit for light to be for Hashem. This Gemara rejects that wholesale, and I have other proofs to this fact, but we'll see even more proofs in the Gemara coming up, but there are other proofs to this, that it's not that way. The bread that is put on the Shulchan is really Hashem giving bread to us. The light in the menorah is not us lighting too for Hashem, but rather Hashem is giving us light. The representative kelim in the Mikdash are not about us giving to Hashem, but rather Hashem, what Hashem gives to us. Our realization that that which is in the Kodesh, or that which is ours, the Shulchan representing Parnassah, Norah representing Chochmah and Torah, it's all a gift from Hashem, it's all given from Hashem. And the clear example of that is that Kohanim eat the Lechem Apanim. They eat the Lechem on the Shulchan. It's not left there and given off or offered up to Hashem. It's given to the Kohanim to consume. That's this idea that it's Hashem's bread to us, Hashem's gift to us. And that's what this Medrash explains over here. And now it continues. Shulchan betzafon u'menorah b'darom. Shulchan's in the north and menorah is in the darom. So you could have just said here, the fact that the Gemara mentions this is just, now you know, okay, they're opposite each other, so they have some things in common. The Rashi takes it a step further and says, that proves something here, which is the next statement. Amar Rabbi Zikar, Amar Elazar, lo la'achila netzirich, v'lo la'orah netzirich. So again, the same idea. I don't need the food on the lechem, I don't need the lechem on the Shulchan, and I don't need the light of the menorah. So Rashi says that that statement before is a proof to it. The Shulchan that's in the north and the menorah that's in the darom shows you that it's not, the light is not for Hashem. Because if the bread was for Hashem and the light was for Hashem, you put the menorah, like people who are eating by their table, they want light over the table, you'd have the menorah next to, adjacent to the table. The fact that the menorah and the Shulchan are found on opposite ends of the Kodesh are an indication that the light is not there for the Lechem or for the Shulchan Hashem. So because of that, the limud is that I don't need either of these. The Rashi mentions, there's the Mizbeach in between. Truthfully, the Mizbeach is pulled forward, so it doesn't really sit in between. I think the biggest rayo, if you're going to say from Rashi, is that they're not adjacent to each other, that they're opposite ends of the Kodesh. But yes, labayit chalonei shkufim atumim. They made bayit, we're talking about here, the bayit, the Beit HaMikdash, had windows that were both shakuf and atum. Shakuf would be, one would be translucent and one would be opaque, would be the Hebrew translations today. Rashi tells us that the translation of shkufim, kanot anu tsar, is the narrow part of the window. Atumim is the wide part of the window. So that the bayit had windows that were both narrow and wide. Tana shkufim mi bifnim, they were narrow on the inside, but atumim mi bachutz, and wide on the outside. To show you lo la'ora ani tzarich, that it shows Hashem doesn't need the light. In the opposite way that you would normally would do it. Normally, if you go to any wall, both from a military standpoint as well as a lighting standpoint, you have the narrow side on the outside of the wall and the wider end on the inside. Because that allows the light to spread and project inward from the outlight from the outside will project inward. Also, from a military standpoint, it's easier to defend when you have the space and you're shooting out to the narrow space. The Mikdash was just the opposite. The narrow was on the inside and the wider on the outside. So I assume that both can be true here, both the military and the lighting. The lighting is to show that the Mikdash gives light outward, not inward. You're not looking for, Hashem doesn't need light, but Hashem rather projects the light outward, as number one. And also from the idea of the military standpoint also, that Hashem doesn't have to defend like a normal army have defense, but rather HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, so therefore it's defended by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's the idea. Here, the menorah is placed outside of the parochet as an edut b'omoed. Edut, what's the edut? What's the testimony of the menorah? Edut to the whole bayalam sheshchina shure b'Yisrael. Menorah is a edut that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with Klal Yisrael. Bim tomar l'orah ani tzarich. If you say that I need the light there, halo kol arba'im shana shalchu Yisrael v'midbar lo'chol al'oro. When Yisrael went in the midbar, the fire that Hashem provided And Hananiah HaKavod that he provided, his light provided them light. So you think you need to light a menorah for him? They do do the chol bayolam sheshkina shurab Yisrael. Clear through the menorah that Kosh Baruch was part of Yisrael. My eduta. Where's the edut? The fact that we light a menorah, that's an edut that Hashem's there? Just because Hashem doesn't need the light? No, this is the edut. Amar Rabba, ze ner, or Amar Rab, ze ner maravi. This is the western candle. Shunodim ba Hashem and keneged chavruta. It gets the same amount of oil. Chatzilok Shem like the other candles. Men hayam adlik uba hayam isayim. From there it lit. And there he would finish. Right, so this turns out to be Machloket Rishonim. I'll give you just a sketch of the Machloket Rishonim over here. Rashi up top and the Rashi Niktiv Yad bring down these two deyot because they bring a different explanation. The explanations really revolve around these other deyot, these other Machloket Rishonim. In Sunday's daf, we'll get into it in more detail over there about exactly this Machloket Rishonim. But the basic Machloket is Machloket Tanaim, which also turns out to be Machloket Rishonim, about the layout of the menorah, whether the menorah was actually north-south or east-west. If it was north-south, it stood from side to side, then the Ner Maravi, according to the Tanaim, was the middle Ner. Ner Maravi was the middle Ner because it faced in towards the Kodesh HaKodeshim, towards the western side. It sat north-south. That one candle faced west, whereas the other candles faced into the middle, and that candle faced in towards the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That's why it was called the Ner HaMaravi, which means that the Ner Amtsai was the Ner HaMaravi. According to those Tanaim, the Rishonim, they'd say that the menorah actually sat east-west. Then what's the Ner HaMaravi? You would have thought the Ner HaMaravi is the most western candle, but that's not the case. Gemara and the Mishnayot and other places say it's the second one from the east. It's the one that is west of the most eastern one. The eastern candle is obviously not Ner HaMaravi because it's in the east, but the one west of that, the first one west of the eastern side, that is called the Ner HaMaravi. So that's the Ner HaMaravi. That's one machloket. The second machloket is exactly how it worked in the Mikdash, the lighting of the candles in the Mikdash. The pasuk says, La'alot Ner Tamid in Parshat Tetzaveh, it says that you have to put it, the candles have to be on Tamid. So what does Tamid mean? Rashi on the spot in Parshat Tetzaveh says Tamid means every day. Just like the Korban Tamid means you bring the Korban every day. It doesn't mean all the time. So over there you have Tamid does not necessarily mean permanent and always, but Tamid sometimes mean on a consistent basis. Right, Lachem is really Tamid. Rashi over there, you're right, says that Lachem is Tamid because it stays on the Shulchan the entire time, in Shabbat the Shabbat. There it is, permanent. You're right, that Rashi gives that as the opposite example. But the word Tamid doesn't always have to mean permanent, but rather consistent. So Rashi says that the word in Tamid over here means consistent. That is because you light the candles at in the afternoon. You do the Hatavat, meaning you fix the candelabra up in the morning. You take out the old deshin and all the wicks and you clean it out. But you only light it in the evening. So that's Rashi's interpretation. The Rambam, on the other hand, the Paskins, and he brings it down, you bring it down Mishnah Torah, that they used to lit it twice a day. They lit it in the morning and in the evening because of Tamid. It always had to be lit. So he came in the morning, he found them extinguished, he fixed them up and light them again. And then in the afternoon again, he had to go and find them, found them extinguished, he'd light them again to be through the night, fix them up. So that's a Machloket Rishonim about whether the lighting of the menorah only took place in the afternoon. That's Rashi and many of the other Rishonim. And the Rambam and some of the other Rishonim believe that it was lit twice. It was lit both in the morning and in the afternoon to be Mikayim Tamid. So now over here, the Ner Maravi, what exactly happened with the Ner Maravi will also be determined by what you think happened with the lighting. According to Rashi, who thinks that it was only lit once a day in the afternoon, the idea would be in the morning you come in and be medashin. You used to clean out the menorah, and the Ner Maravi would still be lit. Everything else might have been extinguished, or if it wasn't, you extinguished it and you cleaned it up. The Ner Maravi would remain lit. He wouldn't clean that out. He would come to the afternoon, and the Ner Maravi would still be lit. So even though it had the same amount of oil as all the others would extinguish in the morning, whereas the Ner Maravi would only extinguish in the afternoon time. So this point, well, what happened was he'd leave the Ner HaMaravi, and then when he came in the afternoon to light them, he would light from the Ner HaMaravi. Rashi says, over here, brings that he actually took the wick out, or the candle out, and then he lit the other ones. Tosos has a big issue that this big Tosos here discusses exactly how it was, and that where this Ner HaMaravi was lit until the afternoon. And so Tosos is actually discussing this issue about the tension, about how it exactly worked, how it functioned, the Ner HaMaravi was there. According to Rashi, the Ner HaMaravi would stay lit until the afternoon, and then you'd light from it, and then afterwards you clean it out and relight it, and start that wick again, because it would remain for the 24 hours, and then you relight it then. That's Rashi. According to the Rambam, where you clean it out in the morning, and then you relight all the candles in the morning, the Ner HaMaravi was, all the others were extinguished, but the Ner HaMaravi would still be lit. Then you clean out the others, relight them, and then clean out the Ner HaMaravi and light it also again. So that the Rambam, according to the Rambam, the Ner HaMaravi only lasted until the morning when they came in to do the cleaning out in the morning, and the others were extinguished because they were done. They only had enough oil to go overnight. As Rashi says, no, that the Ner HaMaravi not only lasted overnight, but all through the day, till the afternoon when they lit the menorah. That tension comes about from what you think exactly happens in the lighting of the menorah. That will tell you how long the Ner HaMaravi lasted. Again, Tosu is trying to deal with, practically, how do you light from the Ner HaMaravi? If it's lit,
are you allowed to light from one nair to the other? They have very long wicks, and that's how they lit from one nair to the other. Rashi claims they were able to take it out and light the others, but Tosfos says, no, we know that they wrote in the Mikdash were affixed and permanent on the menorah, you can't take them out, so how can you be taking them out? So then everybody says it's a long wick that they used to light with, or other options. That the Ner Maravi that extinguishes, this the Rambam says as well, used to take from the Mizbeach Olah to light it. The Ner Maravi had to be lit from the Mizbeach Olah, but the other Nerot could be lit from the Ner Maravi. So that's just a quick summary of this. We'll get to it again on Sunday. Maybe we'll spend more time on it then. All right, the next Mishnah, we're just going to do the Mishnah, and then we'll talk about one important issue, which has ramifications today, about grape juice for Kiddush. So this is, Marayin Ayum Mevi'im Et Hayayin. So we dealt with the grains, then we dealt with the Shemen. Now we want to know, where do they used to bring the Yayin from? Kiduchim v'atufim alpha the yayin. Kiduchim v'atufim are alpha grade A for wine. Shnei lehem beit rima u'beit lavan bahar. The next level, B level wine, comes from beit rima, beit lavan bahar u'kfar signa bebika and kfar signa in the valleys. Kol ha'aretzot k'sherot, once again, everywhere is fine. What that means, whether it means anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, also means Eivar Yardin. We saw that Rashi early on by the Tevuah. El mikan ayu mevi'im. But these are the places they brought, because these were the best quality wines. Im mevi'im lo mibeit hazvalim v'lo mibeit hashlachim v'lo mimash nizra. Again, the same disqualification, which is a fertilized field, an irrigated field, or grape vines that had other items planted around them that would suck the nutrients out of the ground and weaken the grapes that were there. You don't bring them. If you do bring them, they are b'diavad okay. You're not allowed to bring listion. But if you do bring it, then it's okay. What this listion is, Rashi over here says listion ish n'bashlu anavim b'chama yoter midah. That they ripened in the sun too much. Whereas Rashi in the Ktiv Yad, if you look at Rashi in the Ktiv Lav, he says that the listion are actually not that they ripened on the tree. Yain matok mi t'machan ha-shemesh, yu tolim et anavim la-shemesh. They used to pick the grapes and then hang them in the sun. And that's how they became ripened, or that's how they got sweetened. So Rashi in the Ktiv Yad seems to say they were already severed, picked, and then ripened in the sun. The Rashi up top says no, that they were still in the tree, and that's what Tosfos on the top of the Pezayin Amid Aleph says, that listion is clear that they're mechubar. It's not that they're picked already, but rather that they're still in the tree, and that they ripened or sweetened in the sun. So that's what this listion is. Ein mevi'in yashan, you're not allowed to bring older wine. That'll be a discussion tomorrow's Gemara, what it means, old wine. How old does it be? Divrei Rabbi, Yechomim, Machshimim, Yechomim, say it's fine. Ein mevi'in lo matok, not allowed to bring sweet wine, velo mi'ushan, and not smoked wine, velo mibushal, and not cooked wine. Pasul. If you bring it, it is pasul. You can't bring it from those that are delayot. And if you look in Rashi, it says trellises. Those that have vines that are hung across trellises. Elamina ragliot. Rather that the vines that ran along the ground. Umina kramima vudim. It has to be done from, brought from fields that were worked and not that they grew by themselves. You're not allowed to bring them in large barrels. In smaller barrels, because as you dip into the barrels, it causes the wine to deteriorate. So we want to minimize the amount of wine that is going to be in any given barrel. So therefore, you have to use smaller barrels. You're not supposed to fill the wine until the top. So that there is some sort of vapor that sits on top of it that helps the fermentation process of the wine, which is in modern day also in wineries. If you go there, they don't fill the wine to the top, but they rather leave some gapping, some space above it to allow for the fermentation process. You don't bring, when you bring the wine, you don't bring from the top, the skimming on the top, because of the white residue at the top. You don't bring it from the base of the barrel, because of the dregs that are at the bottom. You bring from the middle third, from the area that's the pure, clearest wine. How do they do this in Mikdash? They used to take a tap, you know, they put a tap into the barrel and they start pouring the wine. And this gvar is there with the kanebi ado, he has a staff in his hand. Zeraka gear, as soon as he sees white coming out of the tap, he kish bikane, he whacks the stick and tells him don't pour anymore. So the reason for this is that speaking while you're pouring wine, it was considered to be deleterious to the wine, so therefore they didn't speak when they were pouring the wine. And to know when to stop pouring the wine, I mean, they wanted to get that middle third that was clear. He used to wait there, and as soon as he saw white, he'd stick a stick, because that means they're already getting from the top part of the barrel, and they didn't want that piece of it. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudo, Mer Shiesh Bo, K'machim Pasul. If it has K'machim in it, it's Pasul. Forget about not taking the K'machim. If it has K'machim in it whatsoever, it's problematic. Shnemar. There's a requirement that they be T'mimim by the Mincha.
and the mincha and the nesach that comes with it must be tmimim. All right, now, going back, we have to discuss one possibility over here, which was the case of the emivin lo matok, velo mebushal. What does it mean that you're not allowed to bring matok? You're not allowed to bring sweet wines. So the Rashi brings down actually two interpretations about what matok is over here. That one possibility is tirosh shelo avru alav arbim yom. It's grape juice that hasn't had 40 days pass on it. I mean, it's grapes that were pressed and wine that, and then the juice that's used is within the first 40 days, which is exactly what we call grape juice. So that's one interpretation by Rashi. The second one is that it's something that was not sweet of its own accord, but rather sweetened by an exogenous variable like the sun. It was only sweetened because of the sun afterwards, and that's why it's called matok. Matok doesn't mean that it is sweet, but matok means that it was sweetened. So that's matok. So Rashi brings down both interpretations. Now why this has a major nafkamina is because in the Gemara in Baba Batra on Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph, at the bottom of Tzadi Zayin Amud and Baba Batra, the Gemara says that you can only use the Kiddush Hayom, Mashi Ro'i L'Mizbeach. Whatever is Ro'i L'Mizbeach is Ro'i for Kiddush Hayom. So anything that's not Ro'i L'Mizbeach will not be Ro'i for Kiddush Hayom. And over there, the Gemara says that you can use grape juice over there. Grape juice, even though it is not Ro'i L'Chadchila L'Mizbeach, it's not good for L'Mizbeach L'Chadchila, B'dieved it is Kasher L'Mizbeach. Since grape juice is b'di'evin kosher l'mizbeach, therefore we can use it for kiddush l'chatchila, because we don't have as high, if it's good enough for the mizbeach, even though b'di'evin, it's definitely, now we don't hold that standard for wine, and therefore, or for the kiddush, and therefore kiddush will be fine l'chatchila. Over there we have an example, afterwards you turn the page over on the top, it's a design of that. Amarava, Rava says that he used to take grapes, squeeze them into the cup, and make kiddush on it. So you see that you can use grape juice for kiddush. Over here in our Mishnah, it says about the word matok. It says, if it's matok, then if you bring it, it may be pasul. That's pasul, even b'di'evid on the mizbeach. So if you say, like Rashi over here, that matok means grape juice, something that's pressed, and it was in the first 40 days, then over here, the Mishnah would be saying that grape juice is pasul b'di'evid. It's pasul b'di'evid, then you could not use it for kiddush. On the other hand, Tosa says, no, Rashi's interpretation is wrong. That's what Tosa points out over here, that the second interpretation of Rashi must be right, that it's grapes that were sweetened by an exogenous variable by the sun, they weren't sweet of their own accord. That's the problem here. Those are pasul b'di'evid. But grape juice is fine b'di'evid. That's what the Gemara in Baba Batra says, and that's why grape juice is good for Kiddush Hayom, l'chatchila, because it's good enough for the mizbeach b'di'evid. So therefore, Tosas rejects the position of Rashi. There's also a machalokas with regards to yayin mevushal. Can yayin mevushal be used for Kiddush Hayom? So the machlokas really revolves around what bracha you make on yayin mevushal. Rashi and the Rashbam, Rabbeinu Shmuel's grandson, say that yayin mevushal, you make a bracha of shahakol on it. You don't make a bari priya gofen on the yayin mevushal. So if that's the case, if you only make a shahakol on it, certainly you can't use it for Kiddush Hayom. On the other hand, Tosafot and many of the other Rishonim, including the Ramban, the Rashbo, the Ritva, say that you make a Bori Priya Gofen when it comes to Yayin Mevushal. So Rashi and the Rishbam clearly believe that Yayin Mevushal is the Griuta. It ruins the wine. Ruins the wine to the point that you make a shahakol on it, and therefore clearly you cannot make Kiddush on it because it's only a bracha of shahakol. On the other hand, the other Rishonim believe that Yayin Mevushal is the beneficial. It happens to help it out, or at least doesn't ruin it, and therefore you make a Bori Priya Gofen on it. If you make a Bari Priya Gofen on it, then you can use it for Kiddush Hayom. The only thing that's left is, wait, we said that it has to be Ro'i L'Mizbeach. And over here, can Yayin Mevushal be used on the Mizbeach? Our Mishnah says, Eim Mivin Lo Matok, V'lo Mushan, V'lo Mevushal, V'im Mivin Pasul. So over here it says that Yayin Mevushal is Pasul even B'di'evet. If that's the case, then you would not be able to use it for Kiddush. If you can't use it on Mizbeach at all, then you can't use it for Kiddush Hayom, because it's not even B'di'evet okay for the Mizbeach. So many of the Rishonim quote from a Yerushalmi that asks about Yayin Mevushal. Yerushalmi in Psachim, can you use Yayin Mevushal for the Arba Kosot? And the answer of the Gemara is yes, you can use Yayin Mevushal for the Arba Kosot. The fact that you can use Yayin Mevushal for the Arba Kosot is already an indication that the bracha, first of all, must be Bori Priya Gofen, and number two, that is a qualified for Kiddush, because one of the four Kosot is Kiddush. So those Rishonim that disagree with the Rashi and the Rishbam, who say that number one, Yayin Mevushal is Bori Priya Gofen, and number two is it can be used for Kiddush Hayom, they use as a proof for them, the Yerushalmi, basically that you can use
the Yayin Vushal for the Arba Kosot, which means that it's good for Bori Pirgafen, and number two, it's good for Kiddush Hayom. Whereas Rashi and the Rishabam are relying on our mission over here. Our mission over here says Yayin Vushal can't even be brought on the Mizbeach Bidyeved, and therefore Yayin Vushal is the Griyuta. It's the Griyuta to the point where you make a Shahakal on it. And that's why the reason that Yayin Vushal doesn't have a problem of Yayin Nesech and all these other issues, because according to the Rashi and the Rishabam, it's not Yayin anymore, and that's why it doesn't have these problems. But the other Rishonim, it's not yayin that is used on the Mizbeach. It's not used for yayin yesek once it's mevushal, but nevertheless, it still has the din of bori pri yagofen and being good for kiddush hayom. That has major implications today because our grape juice today are both grape juice and mevushal. So since they're both grape juice and mevushal, we need those rishonim to be matur using grape juice for kiddush. Well, from the grape juice standpoint, we already know the Gemara is explicit that you can use grape juice. The Yayin Mevushal is the Machlokes HaRishonim. But we do paskin like those Rishonim that say Yayin Mevushal is a Bori Pri Hagafen, and therefore one can use the modern-day grape juice for Kiddush Hayom. Okay, we'll stop over here.